I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Here are the stories we're following today.
Karen, we begin with tensions in the Middle East. U.S. officials say Israel has launched a retaliatory strike on Iran less than a week after Tehran's rocket and drone barrage. Bloomberg News Middle East breaking news editor Dana Kreish has the latest on what we know so far.
Reports trickled in the early hours of the morning of a blast over Isfahan, where we know there are military sites and nuclear infrastructure. So the blasts are likely the result of what Iranian media is saying is a defense systems activated to intercept what has now, we know, are drones. We also had a report out that the nuclear site there is completely safe. And that's, of course, reassuring as Iran and Israel are arch rivals, but they also have nuclear programs.
Bloomberg's Dana Kreish says Iranian state media are downplaying the attack. Reuters cites an Iranian official saying there was no missile strike and that Iran is not planning a response at this time.
Well, Nathan, markets remain on edge on these Middle East tensions. Citigroup Global Chief Economist Nathan Sheets says investors tend to overreact to events initially before settling down.
I think at the moment, the market's telling us that the balance of risks here looks to be reasonably favorable. And the response in the oil market has been contained. And if that's the correct assessment, then I think the broader implications of this are it doesn't escalate and we're able to continue on more or less in the status quo.
Citigroup Global Chief Economist Nathan Sheets speaking to us earlier on Bloomberg. And checking oil right now, NYMEX crude up 0.6% at $83.21 a barrel, while Brent is at $87.36.
And Karen, these tensions could give even more of a push to long-stalled aid for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan on Capitol Hill. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter reports that package is on track for votes this weekend.
House Speaker Mike Johnson says he expects to bring up split Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan aid bills tomorrow. The chair of the House Intelligence Committee, Mike Turner, on Bloomberg's Balance of Power, says he thinks it is essential to get aid going to Ukraine this week.
They are running out of ammunition. Russia is certainly surging and putting additional pressure on that front line. And also the lack of U.S. support is impacting morale even in Ukraine.
House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says Democrats are going to do what's necessary to get this across the finish line. The Senate looks to move next week. Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, Ed, thanks. Now to the latest in the criminal case against Donald Trump. The jury has been seated in Manhattan, and Bloomberg's June Grasso reports from New York.
12 jurors and one alternate juror have been sworn in Trump's hush money trial. The jury of Manhattanites includes a sales professional, a software engineer, a security engineer, a teacher, a speech therapist, an investment banker, a retired wealth manager, and several lawyers. The trial judge says he hopes to have jury selection wrapped up today and opening statements on Monday. In New York, June Grasso, Bloomberg Radio.
Okay, June, thank you. Now we want to turn back to markets. We're watching shares of Netflix this morning. They are down more than 6% in early trading. Subscriber growth for the streaming giant did surpass estimates, but the company says those gains will be lower this period. Bloomberg's Lucas Shaw is in Los Angeles. He says optimism for Netflix's first quarter had soared in recent days.
Expectations for this company were really high. I mean, you saw a lot of analysts publishing optimistic notes leading up to it. The stock has been on a tear over the last few months. And so I think there was almost no way that it was going to live up to that. You know, you see the results. It basically doubled the subscriber estimates. That's pretty strong. So I'd say one is just expectations. And the other is maybe that there was some sensitivity around the forecast. You know, the revenue forecast is actually pretty strong. It's going to grow faster than it did in the first quarter. But it said its subscriber growth would tick down a bit in the second quarter.
Bloomberg's Lucas Shaw says Netflix will stop reporting paid quarterly membership and revenue per subscriber starting with the first quarter of 2025.
Well, Nathan, the pushback continues from Fed officials on cutting rates too soon. New York Fed President John Williams says economic data will determine the timing. He was asked about the possibility of raising rates.
It's not my baseline. My expectation right now is that, you know, interest rates are in a good place and eventually at some point would want to lower interest rates as the economy really gets to the 2% inflation that we're headed towards. If the data are telling us that we would need higher interest rates to achieve our goals, then we would obviously want to do that.
New York Fed President John Williams' comments were echoed by other Fed officials. Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic says he's comfortable keeping rates steady. Minneapolis President Neel Kashkari told Fox the Fed could keep rates where they are all year.
Well, Karen, let's turn back to some corporate news now. Paramount Global could be getting a new buyout look from Sony and Apollo Global Management. We get more on that from Bloomberg's Doug Krisner.
We're told in the last week the head of Sony Pictures Entertainment, Tony Vinciquerra, held talks with Apollo about teaming up on a bid. The New York Times says the group would offer cash for shares in Paramount, taking the company private through a joint venture. Now, Sony and Apollo have not submitted an official offer. Paramount is controlled by Sherry Redstone through a family business called National Amusements, and at present, Paramount is in exclusive merger talks with Skydance Media, and independent members of Paramount's board are weighing the Skydance proposal. In New York, I'm Doug Krisner, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, Doug, thanks. And shares of Paramount Global are higher by more than 10.5% in early trading.
Well, Apple has removed some social media services from its Chinese app store, Nathan, including Meta's WhatsApp and Threads. That's in response to orders from Beijing to close more loopholes in the country's longstanding internet firewall. Apple has consistently complied with one of the world's most rigid internet censorship regimes. It says the Cyberspace Administration of China ordered the apps removed over national security concerns. And it's time now for a look at some of the other stories making news in New York and around the world. And for that, we're joined by Bloomberg's John Tucker. John, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. New York City police have removed a pro-Palestinian protest encampment at Columbia University, arresting more than 100 demonstrators in the process. Mayor Adams says the city was asked in writing by university officials to remove the encampment.
Columbia University students have a proud history of protests and raising their voices. Students have a right to free speech, but do not have a right to violate university policies and disrupt learning on campus.
The students had been protesting since early Wednesday, opposing Israeli military action in Gaza. The Biden administration today finalizing a plan to prevent oil development across more than half the U.S. government's mammoth petroleum reserve in Alaska. The story from Washington and Bloomberg's Steve Podisk.
This move is among a string of actions by President Biden to curtail development on federal lands and wall off more than 41 million acres for conservation. It comes as Biden seeks to gain support from young, climate-minded voters after disappointing some last year by authorizing ConocoPhillips' massive willow oil project. The administration is also moving to block road construction essential to opening a copper mine in the state. The moves have drawn condemnation from oil, gas, and mining interests, who said the Biden administration is locking up resources essential for fueling America's energy needs today and in the future. That includes, they say, critical minerals for batteries and other technology. In Washington, Steve Podisk, Bloomberg Radio.
Ukraine says at least 8 civilians were killed, more than 20 injured, in a strike in the country today after Russia launched another barrage, straining the country's dwindling air defenses. And San Francisco is the latest U.S. city preparing to receive a pair of pandas from China. In a continuation of Beijing's famed panda diplomacy, San Francisco Mayor London Breed announcing the panda loan in Beijing this morning. Global news 24 hours a day, whenever you want it, with Bloomberg News Now. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Karen and Nathan.
All right, John, thank you.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
And it's time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update with Dan Schwartzman. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. The final two NBA play-in games are coming up tonight. Chicago is on the road at the Miami Heat. Tip-off is 7 o'clock p.m. Winner of that will face the Boston Celtics in Game 1 on Sunday. Then later on, it's the Sacramento Kings at the New Orleans Pelicans. The winner of that one will go as the 8th seed in the Western Conference and face the Oklahoma City Thunder also on Sunday. The New York Knicks get underway on Saturday as they're home for the Philadelphia 76ers in Game 1 of their Round 1 matchup. Sixers head coach Nick Nurse talking about the Knicks.
I think they're for real. I think they're really good. I think they're fast. I think they can shoot. I think they hit the glass. I think they guard you. I think they've earned that seed. They've played really well and beaten a lot of good teams. So we'll have our work to do here in the next couple days to get ready for them.
That's courtesy of CBS3 in Philadelphia. Light schedule in Major League Baseball last night. The Yankees were off. The Giants shutting out the Diamondbacks 5-0 at home. It was the Red Sox losing at Fenway Park to the Guardians 5-4. Coming up tonight, the Yankees open up a weekend series in the Bronx as they host the Tampa Bay Rays. The Mets opening up a series on the road in Los Angeles. Giants are home again for the Diamondbacks. The Red Sox are on the road at the Pirates. It's the Nationals hosting the Houston Astros, while it's the Baltimore Orioles. They are on the road at the Kansas City Royals. The NHL playoffs gets underway on Saturday as the Islanders open round one on the road at Carolina. It's the Boston Bruins. They're home for Toronto also on Saturday, while the New York Rangers, the winners of the President's Cup with the best record in the NHL, they open up their series versus the Washington Capitals on Sunday at Madison Square Garden. Rangers captain Jacob Trouba assessing his team.
Great lineup, great goaltenders, front to back. I think we've got a deep lineup and just continue to play our game, and we've been good at bouncing back with adversity. There's going to be adversity. There's going to be times where momentum swings. That's the playoffs.
That's courtesy of Rangers.com. That's your Bloomberg Sports Update. I'm Dan Schwartzman, Karen and Nathan.
All right, Dan, thank you. S&P futures down 0.5% or 25 points. Dow futures down 0.4% or 157 points. NASDAQ futures down 0.75% or 130 points. And the 10-year Treasury yield 4.58%.
Coast to coast on Bloomberg Radio, nationwide on Sirius XM, and around the world on Bloomberg.com and the Bloomberg Business app. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager. Middle East tensions are once again in the foreground, with U.S. officials saying Israel has launched a retaliatory strike against Iran less than a week after Tehran's barrage of missiles and drones into Israeli territory. For the very latest, we are joined now by Bloomberg's Europe, Middle East and Africa news director, Rosalind Matheson. Roz, good morning. Can you get us up to speed on what we know at this point about this reported strike?
Well, as you were saying, what we know is that U.S. officials tell us that we did have this retaliatory strike where Israel has launched missiles against Iran. Local media reports say they were missiles that were fired potentially from Israeli planes. These were largely at areas in Iran, in the west and central of Iran. It's a city called Isfahan. That's located in a ring of air bases, military bases, but also some key nuclear facilities for Iran. It seems like the nuclear facilities were not targeted, were not hit, and are functioning as normal. But what may have been targeted was an airbase in the region. And that would obviously be about sending that message in response, as you say, to Iran striking Israel about a week ago for the first time from Iranian soil. And so we've kind of entered this era of tit for tat, retaliation, reprisals against each other. Both of these actions do seem, however, to have been somewhat calibrated. They didn't target civilian populations, and they have not targeted, in this case, Iranians' nuclear facilities. So the question is this enough to keep this conflict from simmering over? Do they both look at each other and say, this is not enough to set off the regional conflict that markets and others have been fearing might happen?
And to that point, Roz, as you mentioned, Israeli media are saying this was a missile strike. We're hearing reports from Iranian state media that they're calling it a drone attack, and that the explosions over the third largest city in Iran, Isfahan, were caused by Iran's air defenses. What does that say about how this could potentially reduce tensions going forward?
Well, it's interesting you say Iran seems quite keen, and there's a bit of heated rhetoric coming from Iran immediately, as you can imagine, but also the sense that they don't want to overplay this. They're certainly, in a way, downplaying it on their state media, on their broadcasting. This morning, they're showing footage of Isfahan, of their nuclear site, looking business very much as usual, traffic moving along and so such. And they're saying there was some drone action, but their air defenses were activated, whereas Israeli media say this was actually a missile strike from Israel. But it does point to that thing, as you say, like, even though we've got strong posturing from Israel and Iran and all of this, and we've got Iran's proxies activated in the region, and Israel is basically fighting those proxies as well, that everyone knows if this does spill into a full-bore regional conflict that pulls in potentially other actors, potentially the US, you know, real impact on things like oil supply globally, that we're kind of moving into unprecedented territory then, and even Iran knows that that would be self-defeating.
And when we have Iran sort of downplaying this and reports from some hawkish officials in Israel, like the national security minister going on X and describing the attack as weak, what does that say about how Israel could go forward with this?
Well, there is that difficulty domestically in Israel. I mean, the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu basically made a bet. He tied his fortunes to the far right in Israel to stay in office, and now he's having to deal with the implications of that. And even, you know, in his war cabinet, in his ministry, he's got those elements who are pushing him to take further action. But they're also saying you need to keep your focus on the main thing here for Israel, which for them is still the conflict in Gaza, the conflict against Hamas in Gaza, and also fending off Hezbollah from the north in Lebanon. You're opening too many fronts here, it becomes difficult. And some of those voices, you know, that we're hearing this morning saying that whatever Israel did was weak, that needs to be more, they aren't actually in the war cabinet. So they're not there making the military decisions, but they are pushing him from the sidelines. The question is, you've also got the US and others urging restraint. So all these competing factors going on for Benjamin Netanyahu. But again, there seems to be a lot of messaging this morning on Israeli TV about the need to keep focused on Israel's goals when it comes to its war in Gaza.
And just 30 seconds left. Where does this leave the war in Gaza now?
Well, Israel insists very much still that its intention is to mount that offensive inside Rafah in the south. That's where we've got a lot of Palestinian civilians clustered, and that's going to happen sooner rather than later. We'd obviously get telegraphed because Israel have to encourage people and move them out of the way to do so. But certainly there's no sense from Israel that they're being deterred in that goal. So that's probably the next thing to look for at some point. Do we see that offensive begin in Rafah in the south near Egypt?
This is Bloomberg Daybreak Today, your morning brief on the stories making news from Wall Street to Washington and beyond.
Look for us on your podcast feed at 6 a.m. Eastern each morning on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
You can also listen live each morning starting at 5 a.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg 1130 in New York, Bloomberg 99.1 in Washington, Bloomberg 1061 in Boston, and Bloomberg 960 in San Francisco.
Our flagship New York station is also available on your Amazon Alexa devices. Just say, "Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Plus, listen coast to coast on the Bloomberg Business app, SiriusXM, the iHeartRadio app, and on Bloomberg.com. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Join us again tomorrow morning for all the news you need to start your day right here on Bloomberg Daybreak.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.